Rick Ramish is very well known in Wisconsin. He's a former deputy sheriff, a former Dane County sheriff, the secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Now he's the executive director of the Colorado Department of Corrections. A few months after taking that job, he made a decision to spend 20 hours in a solitary confinement cell. To talk about that experience, I want to welcome Mr. Ramish. Welcome to Wisconsin Eye again by Skype. Well,
thank you.
Rick, it was very intriguing to me. A few months after you took the Colorado job, after the tragic death of your predecessor, you made a decision to enter a solitary confinement cell in Colorado for 20 hours. Talk to me about that decision, sir.
Well, I had been hired because of some of the progressive things we'd done in Wisconsin, but mainly Governor Hickenlooper wanted me to continue the vision of reforming segregation that my predecessor had started. So I felt when I got here, in order to do that, that I should walk the talk, so to speak. And we had, of course, to go through a culture change because we've been doing business in such a different way for so long, that I felt that going in as an inmate would allow me to write an article for my staff and let them know what my thoughts were and the vision that I had for the Colorado Department of Corrections.
Did you believe, now having run Wisconsin prisons and now running Colorado's, that solitary confinement had been overused? And if so, why did you believe that, sir?
Well, it's one of those moments, I guess, that we had started some reforms in Wisconsin, and of course I took another position, and ultimately when I ended up out here, it's one of those moments where you look at what's being done, and again, this is very professional people that I have the opportunity to work with, but I believe they were being taught the wrong things. And so it was one of those moments where you look at what we're doing as far as the use or overuse of segregation, you take a step back and you go, what the hell are we doing? And that's what we did, and we started some very radical reforms in Colorado.
Before I ask you about your 20-hour experience, were you able to implement some of these changes in the state of Wisconsin prisons prior to leaving?
We had just started working, particularly with getting those that were suffering from mental illness out of segregation in one facility, and that had become was quite remarkable and quite successful. And so that's got me thinking about it. And as I was in Wisconsin, I falsely felt that within a 5-year period, segregation would be outlawed. And I was wrong, of course, but now the courts at least seem to be tending to lean in that direction.
Do you still believe it should be outlawed?
I believe that it should be as severely restricting as we can make it, and that it, instead of being used as a way to run a more efficient institution, that it is used as an absolute last resort for the least amount of time.
Well, so you make a decision, and you announce this to your deputy, and I was reading, I think, in the New York Times that your deputy said, you want to do what? So did you have a problem getting this approved by your line staff? I mean, you run the Colorado prison system, but it's not an easy thing for someone in your position to go into what's been called the hole, is it?
You're right about one thing, was the decision to make was mine. What people thought about it, I probably won't go into, but there were a good number, obviously, that thought that, one, that I would be endangering myself, and two, that it would disrupt the institution. And they had a concern, of course, that either the inmates would find out about it or any number of different groups would find out about it, which would create problems.
Well, before we talk about that experience, one more qualifying question. Did you believe solitary confinement to be overused in across the nation, including in prisons in Wisconsin and in Colorado, sir?
You know, I've been asked that question quite a bit, and the fact of the matter is my response is that I don't preach to other states what we're doing here. If someone wants to take a look, I'm more than willing to do that. I believe that in the state of Colorado, there was no question that we were overusing of segregation. A very quick example is when I got here, 50% of those in segregation were released directly from segregation into the community. We have not done that now for over 19 months.
Well, I'm so intrigued by the details of your visit to solitary. They had to put you on a top tier cell so inmates wouldn't be dumping anything down below you. So you were on, were you on a third floor cell?
I was on a second floor. Second tier.
And you entered approximately at what time?
I believe it was around 3 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the evening, and went in, of course, as an inmate would, dressed as an inmate. The status was what we call RFP, which is removed from population, which means that I went in with nothing other than a institutional small pen and a couple of 8x10 sheets of paper that had rules and regulations and statements on it.
And the guards that were working the solitary unit, they certainly knew that you were the secretary, or you were running the prison system, right?
Yes, they did. But, you know, in most circumstances, as I found, what a lot of people don't realize is after that, a period of time after that, I also put on a correctional officer's uniform and worked side by side with them at another institution for an 8-hour shift. And the point being is that they forget very quickly who is there and why you're there. And I was able to, at least looking through a very small window, watch them do their duties throughout the period I was in there.
Now, you were in solitary for 20 hours. Did you plan on spending less time there or more time there, Rick?
You know, I had picked, it was an arbitrary number. I picked 20 hours so I would cover all three shifts and see what my feelings were during, you know, from the afternoon till the night hours till the late afternoon hours of the following day. I wanted to experience each of those 8-hour shifts.
Okay, now let's talk about the psychological effect on solitary as you learn firsthand about it, sir.
You know, throughout my career, I've stepped in and out of who knows how many solitary confinement cells, but I wasn't prepared, and I've got almost 40 years, as you know, in the criminal justice system. So I thought I was really prepared, and to show how naive I was, I had a lot of work to get done the night before, so I was up late, and I thought, oh, I'll just go in for a big 12-hour, 14-hour nap, and things will be great. The noise was overwhelming. It was overstimulating. I became very bored very quickly. It took about 5 minutes to get my cell in order with the limited things I'd been given. And after that, you know, people can say they're bored, but when you're bored, that's up to you how you can control that and get up and move around or go outside or do any number of different things. But put yourself in a 7x13-foot cell with absolutely nothing to do. And when you put yourself in that position, very quickly you understand that what's happening, no matter if it's a short period of time or a long period of time, it's not good.
Well, talk about the psychological demons. I mean, were you afraid? What do you think about there? The fact that you are confined and have no recreation, nothing to read. I mean, what's the biggest psychological enemy as you learned as you were confined in the hole?
Well, you know, I can be alone under many circumstances for, you know, lengthy periods of time and not have it bother me, but I'm always in control of what it is I do when I am alone.
Yeah.
This I had no control over. Your sensory deprivation, I consider myself a very good guesser of what time it is, for instance. And I lost track of time very quickly. And which surprised me, I broke a promise I had made to myself. And my promise to myself was, when the officers came around with whether it be meals or bed checks or whatever, I was not going to ask them what time it was. And I lost such concepts of time that finally when they brought lunch to me on that following day, I asked what time it was because a couple of things happened. One is I thought it was much later than that. And then when I was supposed to get out at 3 p.m, I thought that it was much later, that my staff was maybe playing a joke on me. That ran through my mind, and I thought, I'm the boss. They wouldn't be doing that. The fact of the matter is they got me out at 3 o'clock on the dot. And so the time was a factor. The fact that the cell was lit during the period I was in there, that was a factor. And again, the constant noise. There never really is a time that it gets completely quiet. I found out later from the warden, I wish he would have told me when I first went in there, that he said, well, you know, most of the inmates roll tissue paper up and stick it in their ears. And I that's another thing where you take a step back and go, well, what are we doing?
Wisconsin has interviewed in a model of solitary cell a former inmate, and he talks nonstop about the noise. Was it the banging? Was it the shouts? Talk to me about the noise, please, Rick.
You know, one of the things that in this profession we say we use segregation for is because we want to make sure that certain members of the inmate population can't communicate with each other. I heard a good amount of communication going on. In fact, I was warned by the warden to put a towel down at the base of my door because there's a small slot there where notes can be put back and forth between the various cells.
That's called phishing, right, Rick?
It's called phishing.
Phishing.
And that's exactly what it's called. And you know, the warden felt that because I was new, that other inmates would try and intimidate me. So that the communication was one thing, but the other is that, you know, you can't talk about segregation reform without talking about the mentally ill. And, you know, all of us in my profession like to walk up to the podium, slam our fist on it and say, in Colorado or whatever state, the Department of Corrections runs the largest mental health institution in the state. And we do. But the fact of the matter is, what I tell myself is then in the morning, I have to look in the mirror and go, where do a good number of them end up? And the fact of the matter is, if they're mentally ill, they're going to be disruptive or can be in an institution. They end up in segregation to run a more efficient institution. And now you've got someone with a mental illness in a 7 by 13 foot cell, letting the demons chase them around in there 23 hours a day, 7 days a week. We've fixed a good majority of that here.
But as a professional, let's be clear, there is a place in our prisons, Wisconsin and Colorado, for solitary confinement, right?
Well, I can say that in Colorado, we have made some radical reforms. We're the only state in the nation that has a limitation on when one can go in. That's a one-year period, and it's only for extremely serious offenses.
Were you able to do that by law, or did you need a statute? I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I'm just curious.
We did that on our own. What we did pass by law, I'm not sure if we're the first state, but we're one of the few states that was able to get legislation passed, working with the governor and the legislature and the ACLU in a partnership to pass a law that only under extreme exigent circumstances can the seriously mentally ill be placed in segregation. We've developed a residential treatment program where now if someone is involved in a discipline type incident, if it's determined that mental illness played a part in that, we completely remove them from the discipline process. We have two facilities that are totally dedicated to those with mental health issues. Segregation is banned at those facilities. The results are absolutely tremendous. Assaults are down about 50%. Use of restraints are down well over 60%. Forced cell entries are well over 70% down, and the facilities are calmer and they're safer. And our overall inmate on staff assault in all our institutions is the lowest since 2006.
The former inmate that we interviewed, and let's be clear, this is someone convicted of sexual assault, so that's a serious crime, but he spent over the years he was in prison, he spent months in solitary. He calls it torture. Is it torture?
You know, what I can say is I've talked to a number of experts in this area that have studied the use of segregation for their lifetime. And when I talk to them about that, what I'm trying to find is a certain number of days where, yes, for everybody, it becomes mentally harmful. I haven't really been given that number yet because I hear what I expect to hear, which is, you know, it depends on the individual. But I will say this, my 20 hours in there, I didn't have to spend any more time in there to know that nothing good came from that. I didn't have to spend three more days or three more weeks to know that this was damaging to me. And so we take that into consideration with our policies here. And, you know, we're certainly, I believe, moving in the right direction. So, you know, when you ask the question, is it torture? I'm not sure of the answer to that, but what I am pretty sure of in my own mind anyway, is long-term segregation either manufactures or multiplies mental illness.
You spent 20 hours, excuse me, in solitary confinement. What have you learned about people who spend 30, 60, or 90 days in solitary confinement, just in terms of what it does to them mentally and emotionally, sir?
You know, I want to be clear about one thing is, you know, 20 hours is a grain of sand on a beach compared to, you know, even the 30, 60, 90 days. There was some in Colorado that had been in segregation for over 20 years. They were in a what's called a level system, which is used by a number of jurisdictions that, frankly, you have to earn your way out. And if you're mentally unstable, or you just get mad and you have a bad day, you go right back to the beginning level and you never get out. And so, you know, in my mind, I can't imagine what it would be like for me to spend 30 days in segregation. You know, the incidences of the screaming and the throwing and the smearing of things, I may well fit into that category because I'd be so angry that I was in there, and not only in there, but didn't know when I was coming out, that I'm gonna react to it.
Wisconsin was sued, and as part of the settlement has announced some changes in its solitary confinement practices. Were you consulted in these changes? Do you have any idea how Wisconsin has continued to amend and change its practices, Rick?
You know, I'll let Secretary Wall answer most of that. I will say that yes, we were consulted.
You were. Okay. And what progress do you think Wisconsin has made based on your consultations with the Wisconsin Department of Corrections?
You know, I haven't followed policy by policy what they've done. I've obviously, you know, read the reports that have come out and said that changes are being made, and sounds like in a positive manner, but I couldn't give you the specifics because we're doing so much here that a lot of my attention.
I understand. Wisconsin I has asked to talk to Secretary Wall and those in the Wisconsin DOC to talk about the changes in solitary confinement. They are reluctant and so far haven't agreed to talk to us. Do you have any idea? Is there reluctance on the part of prison officials nationally to talk about this practice?
You know, I'm a member of a national group, the Association of State Correctional Administrators, and I could say nationally that virtually, if not all states, are really looking hard at their segregation policies, and most are changing. I happen to co-chair a restrictive housing committee for the American Correctional Association. We just finished a draft that will, it's a historical in the sense of what it recommends as standards for the use of segregation. But, you know, corrections across the board, you know, we get hit by the media pretty good. And so I think there's just a general caution when dealing with those that are taking a look at what it is that we're doing. We've tried to be very transparent here. You know, we've had a number of different large media networks come out. We've had a number of the larger universities come out and take a look. And, you know, one of the things I found most difficult, which I never realized, was so many people don't believe we've done what we've done, that there's cynicism about it. And my response has always been, come on out and take a look. And many have. And I can tell you that, you know, our Supermax has been repurposed. You walk through that facility now, the results are absolutely miraculous. And so that's why we're doing it. When you consider 97% come back to the community, we all know that number. But then it's up to corrections to determine how they're coming back. And if they're coming back mad and going back out worse than when they came in, we failed in our mission. And that's what we talked about here, is our mission isn't to run a more efficient institution. That's a noble goal. Our mission is public and community safety.
What about the pushback from your veteran wardens and your old line guards? Have they resisted some of these changes and just dismiss them as the changes being pushed by a liberal? Although that's not a good term to describe you, but what about the pushback from your veteran guards and wardens, sir?
I'd like to say everybody gathered in group hugs and skipped down the hallway singing Kumbaya, but you know, that didn't happen. And obviously there are those that disagreed with what we were doing, but I got to tell you, it was a small number. And the reason it was small is because everybody was involved in the process and in the change. And also when you explain what our mission is, you know, how can someone argue against the statement when you stand up in front of a group of corrections professionals and say, okay, let me get this straight. We have someone that's too dangerous to be in general population in a maximum security prison supervised by trained security officers. So we put them in segregation and then release them directly into the community. You can't justify that, at least in my mind, and our staff understands that. And when you talk about the mission, and we've talked about it constantly, the majority of the people that work for the Colorado Department of Corrections believe in what we're doing, and now they're seeing what we're doing, which is a safer facility.
You can talk personally about the emotional toll of being in solitary cell for 20 hours. Is there a greater emotional toll on a guard who works only with the inmates in solitary for 1 or 2 or 3 weeks straight, sir?
You know, that's been a debate that's gone on for some time now. I know that some states rotate, others do not. And I think it depends on the individual. We have with those two facilities that are dedicated to the to those with mental health issues, one has severely mental health issues, and that staff, they're all volunteer, and I love them. I mean, and I don't want them to move because they are doing such a great job and they're dealing with such a difficult population. So, you know, the old Stanford experiment of the with the students and the officers taking, you know, the students playing the role of officers and then others playing the role of inmates and what happened. I think you have to be diligent. I think that you can't be complacent. You don't necessarily need it. We're going to rotate them every few months, but you may have to for certain individuals. And what we found with everything we deal with, particularly with the mental health is mental illness people, is one size doesn't fit all, and that includes our correctional officers. So again, you have to get the right person in the right place.
Okay, and thanks for your time. I've only got a few more questions. So you were consulted in some of the changes in Wisconsin, but you're obviously focusing on Colorado. So you can't give me any summary of the changes in Wisconsin.
No, I can't. I can tell you that what we've done here has really, this whole 20-hour solitary confinement thing. I did that for internal purposes. I didn't do it to get an article in the New York Times. Ultimately, that's what happened, because once I had the experience and once I wrote the notes up, I thought there may be a bigger picture here than just Colorado. So that's how it went national. And as a result of that, I'm not saying it started a debate on the overuse of confinement, but it certainly threw a big bucket of gasoline on the debate. And as a result of that, there's been a lot of attention focused on us. And so, I've got a great governor. I asked him, I said, because, you know, I was being requested to do interviews like this so often. I said, you know, governor, is it getting too much where I should just put a stop to it? And he said, you know, getting a national stage in this area is so important. You keep it going as long as you can keep it going. So that's one of the things I consider as my job today.
Wisconsin, as you said, you understand us to be making progress and changes in our use of solitary. Do you have any advice for Secretary Wall and those that are overseeing solitary in Wisconsin now, Rick?
You know, if I have advice for everyone, I would just say that, no matter what we do in this position, there are naysayers, and believe in your vision and do everything you can to move it forward.
And then finally, where do you want the use of solitary confinement to be in Colorado prisons in 3, 4, or 5 years, sir?
Well, we just had some discussion about that, and I think that although we've made some tremendous strides, I won't say a lot about what the future holds for us, but I'm going to say that we're going to look a lot different tomorrow. When I say it, I mean a lot of tomorrows than we look today.
Okay. And then finally, on a personal note, it's our gun deer season back here. Rick, you're an avid hunter. How come you're not back in Wisconsin? shooting.
You know, I've been tearing myself up. I've been whining to everybody that'll listen. Most won't, you know, but I've been saying this is the first Wisconsin deer season I've missed since I was 17 years old. And I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but it's a long time. I really, truly miss it.
Okay. Rick Ramish, Executive Director of Colorado Department of Corrections. I want to thank you for being so gracious with your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.